The Future of Aviation Advisory Committee delivers its report. GA needs ASAP-type immunity for voluntary safety reports. And NTSB calls for an end to the Lapchild era. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, December 17th, 2010. The Future of Aviation Advisory Committee delivered its list of recommendations on how to address challenges faced by the U.S. aviation industry to Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood on Wednesday. Among the recommendations are federal government assistance in funding next-gen equipage, ensuring greater transparency for consumers in airline pricing, expanding the sources of safety data available to the FAA, and ensuring that global airline alliances enhance the viability and competitiveness of the U.S. industry. The committee, which was created in April, presented a total of 23 specific recommendations on how to ensure the strength, competitiveness, and safety of aviation. The committee's 19 members represented airlines, airports, labor, manufacturers, environment, finance, academia, consumer interests, and general aviation stakeholders. Among those 19 were two members of the board of the General Aviation Manufacturers Association, Goodrich Corporation's Cindy Ignatovich and Cessna's Jack Pelton, espoused familiar GA concerns, but also urged the Department of Transportation to extend to GA the same protections enjoyed by commercial pilots and operators in voluntary reporting of safety concerns, as safety management systems become more widespread. GAMA President Pete Bunce commented after the committee's report, quote, "I am very proud of Cindy's and Jack's work. They took on some extremely tough issues and helped to build consensus and chart a sensible policy direction. Once these key recommendations are implemented, the entire industry will benefit from the insight and dedication of these leaders," unquote. One of the committee's recommendations is that Secretary LaHood utilize the full resources of his office to educate the flying public about the dangers of holding children on laps during airline flights. Specifically, the committee wants LaHood to update economic and safety data concerning small children and to take decisive steps, which may include rulemaking, to address child passenger safety in aviation. National Transportation Safety Bureau Chairman Deborah Herzman was quick to criticize the recommendations as too timid. She said she appreciates the committee, quote, "acknowledging the dangers associated with children flying on their parents' laps, but we would have preferred to see the FAA be mandated to require that every person, including our youngest children, be restrained appropriately for their age and size. We know that the safest place for children younger than age 2 traveling on airplanes is in an appropriate child safety seat. The era of the lap child on airplanes should come to an end," unquote. Up next on ANN, Vans keeps reaching impressive milestones. Airbus now blames Rolls-Royce for a busted projection. And here's a chance to learn more about your turbocharger. You're listening to Aero News.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/piperaircraft.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for December 17th. I'm Paul Plack. Vans Aircraft continues to reach milestones in kit aircraft that many certificated manufacturers would love to claim. The first flight of an RV-7 owned by Terry Small of Prescott, Arizona on December 5th went into the books as the 1,000th example of the tailwheel RV-7 or tricycle gear 7A to be completed and flown since the plane was introduced a decade ago. It's also the 7,088th Vans kit to get airborne. By way of perspective, that number of Vans kit planes is multiples of the total sales to date of the entire U.S. light sport aircraft segment's 100-plus models, since LSA was created in 2005. There are at least another 3,000 RV7 kits out there under construction now. In Terry's case, he was an early RV7 buyer. 10 years of on-and-off construction were interrupted by a year in Afghanistan and 5 moves. Of his completed aircraft, Terry says, quote, "What a wonderful magic carpet ride. I owe special thanks to my son and another thank you to my lovely fiancé, who was always there with help," unquote. Fiancé for 10 years? Hopefully finishing the plane has now demonstrated the requisite level of commitment. That RV7 would look great with tin cans tied off the tailwheel. That uncontained failure of a Rolls-Royce Trent 900 engine on an A380 last month is now being blamed by Airbus for its failure to meet its projection to deliver 20 of the Super Jumbos this calendar year. Airbus projected delivering 2 of the big planes this month to make 20 for the year, but says it had to cannibalize a plane on the production line to get a new engine out to an existing customer. That new plane's delivery will now be delayed into next year, leaving 2010 deliveries at 19. Reuters reports that Airbus may seek compensation from Rolls-Royce. The projection had already been reduced from 22 deliveries that were forecast early this year after supplier Koito Industries of Japan was found to have falsified safety documents and was forced to recertify the safety of the seats it was making for Airbus. The Cessna Pilots Association will hold a one-day seminar on turbocharging at its headquarters in Santa Maria, California, on Saturday, February 26th. Association Executive Director John Frank says the seminar will thoroughly educate the aircraft owner on the components and detailed workings of popular Teledyne Continental turbocharging systems used on a variety of current and legacy Cessna models. There will be a special emphasis on power plant management, leaning, and high-altitude operations. A hands-on demonstration presented by Phil Kirkham of Coastal Valley Aviation will include details of proper leak checking of exhaust and induction systems. As a bonus, the seminar will include information on the physiology of high-altitude flight and oxygen system use. Tuition is $250 for Cessna Pilots Association members and $305 for non-members. There's more info at the association's website, Cessna.org. But it's a couple menus deep. Click on Courses, then on the next page, click Course Schedule or Course Registration. Still ahead, Orbital Sciences Corp. wants to build a four-place space plane for NASA. The ISS gets 3 new occupants this afternoon. And a historic F-15 gets a restoration and place of honor. You're listening to Aero News.
Now, another moment of freedom from Sirius Aircraft. Freedom through safety. Perhaps the ultimate freedom is confidence, assurance, and peace of mind. We design it into every personal aircraft we build. It's the security that comes with knowing you're flying the plane with a parachute. The breakthrough concept that launched the Cirrus phenomenon.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, December 17th. I'm Paul Platt. Orbital Sciences Corporation says it has submitted a proposal for NASA's Commercial Crew Development 2 contract. The company also provided some details of its four-seat space plane proposal, which looks vaguely like Son of Shuttle. The craft would be what Orbital calls a blended lifting body, which would be launched atop an expendable rocket, then make a conventional runway landing. Frank Culbertson, a former NASA astronaut and Orbital's senior VP for human spaceflight systems, calls the idea safe, affordable, and timely. Quote, "Our team is looking forward to sharing our ideas with NASA in greater detail and discussing how they can best be applied to helping the United States continue to access the ISS in the safest and most cost-effective manner possible, as well as supporting commercial ventures that are seeking access to space." Unquote. NASA astronaut Katie Coleman, Russian cosmonaut Dmitry Kondratyev, and European Space Agency astronaut Paolo Nespoli launched to the International Space Station from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan Wednesday. The three are scheduled to dock their Soyuz TMA-20 to the station about 3 p.m. Eastern today. They'll join Expedition 26 Commander Scott Kelly and flight engineers Alexander Kaleri and Oleg Skripochka to continue research, perform maintenance, and welcome several visiting vehicles. Kondratyev and Skripochka will conduct two spacewalks in January and late February. Among the items on their to-do list, they'll install an antenna to complete an information transfer system that sends large computer files to and from the station. And finally today, a historically significant military fighter will get a restoration and place of honor in a West Coast museum. In what's being described as an unprecedented opportunity, the Pacific Coast Air Museum will provide the home for the first aircraft to respond on the scene when the World Trade Center Twin Towers were attacked in New York City on September 11, 2001. The F-15 first responder will be fully restored and the centerpiece of an interactive educational exhibit. The aircraft arrived Tuesday at the museum at the Charles M. Schulz Sonoma County Airport. The aircraft has been officially awarded to the museum by the National Museum of the United States Air Force. Now, an aggressive fundraising effort to build a befitting exhibit is underway, with a goal of $250,000. The exhibit will honor those who perished and those who responded in a valiant effort to save lives, as well as educate visitors and tell the untold story of heroism in the skies and on the ground that day. On 9/11, two U.S. Air Force F-15 Eagles from the 101st Fighter Squadron, 102nd Fighter Wing, Otis Air National Guard Base in Massachusetts, were scrambled by NORAD in response to the attack on the World Trade Center in New York. Accounts of that moment convey the relief and sense of security citizens felt when they looked up to see and hear fighters circling the airspace. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, final thoughts on last week's SpaceX triumph from company execs and NASA's program manager. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.